From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump's clear direction of the January 6th rioters to attack the Capitol and delay the certification of the 2020 election appears evident to anyone who's been watching the Senate impeachment trial. It could not be clearer that Trump repeatedly exhorted his supporters to overturn the election and told them when and where to show up and watched with glee as they went hunting for lawmakers and then Vice President Mike Pence. But many GOP senators who are de facto jurors in this trial appear unmoved. That is perhaps unsurprising given that lawmakers like Senators Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz were actively enabling Trump's coup attempt. My guest is Bill Blum, lawyer, retired judge, novelist, writer, and lecturer at the USC Annenberg School of Communications. Welcome to the program, Bill.
Thank you for having me.
So first, as we've looked back at these proceedings, it seems as though the case this year, compared to last year, it was just a year ago that the Senate was trying Trump for the first time. This is so much worse than the Ukraine scandal, so much more damning. Have you been sort of impressed by the prosecution so far?
I've been very impressed. This is the nightmare that the founding fathers had in mind when they created they included the remedy of impeachment in the Constitution. There is nothing more impeachable than a president who incites followers to, in effect, overthrow the government. And that's exactly what happened on January 6th.
They built a very compelling case, the way in which they've pieced together video evidence, including evidence that's out there and available in social media and surveillance footage from the Capitol. So stuff that the public had not yet seen, and put it together with a timeline, with Trump's words. As a retired judge, as a lawyer, how would that play out in a more traditional court of law?
Well, this isn't a traditional court of law, as we know. The jury consists of 100 senators. They are not impartial. Some of the senators, as you've already alluded to, are indeed complicit in the attempted coup. But as to the question of how it would play out in a court of law, I think that the managers presented a very strong case. The defense that Donald Trump would mount in a criminal trial is that what he said on January 6th was protected speech under the Brandenburg versus Ohio precedent from 1969 from the Supreme Court. I think that would fail in a criminal proceeding, and I can explain why. But putting that to one side, Brandenburg isn't even applicable to impeachment because, as we know from the history of impeachment, impeachment applies to what we call high crimes and misdemeanors, and impeachable offenses are abuses of power which do not need to match up element for element with statutory crimes. So Donald Trump's speech is not protected by the First Amendment. And were this a trial, a fair trial, whether before a court of impeachment or an ordinary court, I think that Donald Trump would be convicted and convicted rather easily.
And of course, one of the arguments that the senators and House members who are defending Trump keep bringing up is that, well, you can't impeach a president who is no longer president because the only recourse that the Senate gets is to remove a president from office. He's already removed, so why bother? Of course, he was actually impeached before he left office. This is the trial part of the charges that he was, that were agreed upon that he should face, right?
That's correct. The position that you cannot try a former civil officer of the United States is wrong. The Senate has ruled in this particular case that this trial can go forward and that you can indeed impeach and try a former official. And as you point out, Trump was impeached the second time while he was still president. So the argument's wrong for any number of reasons. It's wrong in terms of the history of impeachment, reaching all the way back to the debates at the Constitutional Convention, and then going forward with the first impeachment, which involved William Blunt, who was a senator, and then moving forward to 1876, when you had the impeachment trial of the former Secretary of War, William Belknap. And it also is incompatible with the text of the Constitution for people who are textualists, because the Constitution clearly sets forth two different sanctions. You have removal upon conviction and then disqualification. Those are two different votes, and you can't disqualify until you remove. So you're only going to disqualify a former official. In the history of American impeachments, there have been eight convictions, all of judges. Only three of those have involved disqualifications. So those are two separate decisions that the Senate makes, and the text of the Constitution, as the House managers have pointed out, also supports the position that you can indeed impeach and try a former official. So that notion advanced by senators and by, of course, Trump's defense counsel just doesn't hold water.
And of course, the Senate gets to decide whether or not it's constitutional, and the Senate decided. So at this point, it's a moot issue. What about the fact that in a traditional trial, you would have jurors that are, well, impartial at the very least? And here you have a situation where there are senators who, right from the start, elevated Trump's lies around the election, actively helped him try to overturn the election, and even voted against the election certification when, after the riot, lawmakers met late into the night in the early hours of the next morning to certify.
Well, the answer to that is a bit complicated and hard for some people to grasp, because we are talking about a trial in the Senate, but we're talking about an impeachment trial. And that is a hybrid of politics and law. So it's not really a legal proceeding in the traditional sense. And the Constitution is what governs the impeachment trial. The Constitution governs all of our other ideas of equal protection and due process. As to regular trials, we have a well-developed body of law as to what we understand by due process. And one of the things that's essential to due process is that we have impartial jurors. However, the Constitution, as being the supreme law of the land, is what carries the day for the Senate impeachment trials. And the Constitution commits to the sole power of the Senate the authority to try these impeachment cases. And in each case, the Senate sets forth its rules of procedure. The Senate has a big impeachment manual, but that manual says that in each case, specific rules of procedure will be provided for. And so Senate impeachment trials are quite a bit different from ordinary trials. You don't necessarily hear from witnesses. Last time we didn't hear from witnesses, even though the managers wanted to call them. This time, I don't think the managers are actually going to press very hard to call for witnesses. So that's one big difference. But the major difference, which you just alluded to, is that every senator gets to serve. And in this case, that includes some senators who are clearly complicit in Trump's attempt to overturn the results of the election. And it also includes 100 victims of the Capitol riot. Yeah. These senators were all there. Their lives and their physical well-being were put in jeopardy during the riot. So this is not your ordinary case. However, there are similarities to a trial. So it's a hybrid, and we have to understand it as such if we want to comprehend what's going on.
It's quite remarkable. One might have predicted maybe 6 months ago, well, the only way Republicans backing Trump would abandon him would be if their own lives were on the line. Well, their lives were on the line, and there's still at least 44 out of the 100 that look likely to exonerate him. We've had six senators who voted in the first day's vote on Tuesday, which was simply a vote around the constitutionality that required a simple majority. We ended up having a total of 56 senators voting to allow the impeachment trial to proceed. That's all 50 Democrats and six Republicans. A new one joining them was Bill Cassidy, joining, you know, the sort of usual suspects such as Mitt Romney and Lisa Murkowski. It's possible that all six will join Democrats in convicting Trump. That still leaves 44 other Republicans. 11 more of those 44 would be required to convict Trump, because to actually convict, we need a two-thirds majority. We need 67 out of 100. And one has to imagine that, you know, there must be varying motives among those 44 Republicans as to why they might be hesitant to convict Trump. Some might want to be like Trump, say Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz. But do you think there's also an element of fear, this fear to get the kind of Liz Cheney treatment back in their home states, that if they stand up to Trump, that their base will, you know, will excoriate them?
Are thinking about their own political futures in how they cast their votes. I do not expect that 17 Republicans will cross the line no matter what Donald Trump did. And they are seeking cover under these, by way of these procedural notions that you can't impeach someone who has already stepped out of office. That just gives them an excuse. And by the way, even though the Senate voted that the trial can proceed, the 44 who voted against that motion can still use that as the basis for their acquittal. And in another difference between this case and an ordinary trial is that each senator gets to decide what the standard of proof is in the case. You know, in an ordinary trial, if it's a civil trial, it's preponderance of the evidence. If it's a criminal trial, it's proof beyond a reasonable doubt. There is no standard of proof in an impeachment trial. Every senator gets to vote according to his or her own best judgment. And that judgment, unfortunately, is largely political. Now, it may not be simply a fear of Donald Trump, who is the leader of this insurgency, which I have written for many years is a fascist insurgency. But it may be a fear of the actual insurgency itself, because that insurgency comprises a substantial portion of the Republican Party base. And too many of these Republican senators either agree with that insurgency and its basic principles and values, or they are afraid of it. So we might get six or more to vote for a conviction, but I don't think we're going to get anywhere close to two-thirds.
So the Republicans who support, who will likely vote to exonerate Trump, are afraid of being held accountable by the insurrectionist base. Those who do vote to convict Trump, I imagine, are also terrified of that base actually coming back to attempt another coup and killing more people than they did. It just seems really strange that that fear doesn't trump the other fear, to use a poorly chosen word.
One of the things that I would have suggested that the managers appeal to in terms of these Republicans is that your party is being taken over by an insurgency. You want to lead a conservative Republican Party. The only way you can take back the Republican Party is by convicting Donald Trump and standing against this insurgency. So there could be some appeal to self-interest, some direct appeal to the Republican senators on that basis. I haven't heard that yet.
Now, Bill, you wrote a piece that was just published in Salon. Odds of conviction are poor, but Democrats must stay strong on impeachment. So let's talk about that. Even though Democrats know that the Republicans are not going to be moved by all the evidence they prepare, why is it important for them to go through the motions? You know, it isn't just political theater, right? This is important for them to go through the motions.
This is important because it is a trial that will go down in history. This is a trial for the American public. It's not political theater, and it's a trial for history. It's a trial to hold a president who has clearly committed an impeachable offense accountable for his conduct, for his rhetoric, and it is one where we need to draw a line between what is permissible in a democracy and what isn't. So this is a fight for the soul of democracy, and I do think that if Democrats and progressives use the trial properly, they can use it as a tool to hold this insurgency accountable and to crush it by all available legal means in the future. Because this insurgency didn't begin on January 6th and it didn't end on January 6th. So this is a very, very important moment in our history. And I likened it in that article, as I did in an earlier article, to the trial of the murderers of the teenager Emmett Till in 1955. Emmett Till's murderers were brought to trial in Mississippi, and everyone knew that there would be an exoneration there. And indeed there was. But that trial, that murder prosecution, had to be made. It had to be brought as a matter of principle. And sometimes principle trumps, to coin a phrase here, pragmatism, immediate pragmatism. And that's what this trial is really all about. And that's why it is so very, very important.
So the fact that there is this insurgency that continues to be stoked by Trump and others, I imagine that, you know, yeah, okay, the managers decided not to bring any witnesses, but what about Trump himself? Couldn't they have subpoenaed Trump? Shouldn't they have subpoenaed him? It would have been quite interesting for them to have brought the former president himself to try to explain why he did what he did and what he said, because, you know, he wanted his lawyers to not even focus on constitutionality arguments. He wanted his lawyers to press the fact that he thinks he won the actual election. And sometimes Trump is his own worst enemy when he's allowed to talk, as we saw, for example, in the first presidential debate last year. You know, they could have subpoenaed him. They requested that he appear. And of course, he turned them down right away.
That's right. I wrote an article during the first Trump impeachment trial for the Progressive, in which I advocated calling Trump as a witness. And at that time, the president, being a sitting president, might have been able to resist a subpoena. He couldn't resist a subpoena this time. He is private citizen Donald Trump.
Exactly. Now, he no longer has the immunity that his office brought him last time.
That's correct. And he could not fight that subpoena. Now, why the managers are giving up on that, it's probably because of extraneous concerns, that is, concerns outside the impeachment trial, that they don't want to prolong the trial that much because it will interfere with other items on the political agenda of the day that the Biden administration is pursuing. But I think that you are absolutely correct. They could have subpoenaed Donald Trump. They could have enforced that subpoena. And if Donald Trump were ever made to testify under penalty of perjury before the Senate, and I would have advocated bring him to testify in the well of the Senate, don't farm it out to some deposition committee, that would have been Donald Trump's ultimate undoing. He does not do well when he is not backed up by Secret Service personnel, by teleprompters, by his Fox News enablers. I think you would have seen Donald Trump crumble before the pressure of examination and cross-examination. That is a road not taken that I think is regrettable.
We understand that one of the other threads that the defense is bringing up, that Trump supporters love to bring up on Fox News and elsewhere, is, just because Trump riled up the mob and they showed up to the Capitol doesn't mean Trump is responsible, because Democrats riled up Black Lives Matter activists. And look at all the violence that happened last year. And we certainly aren't blaming Democrats for the burning down of the police station in Minneapolis. How do you respond to that equivalence?
Well, it's not equivalent. That's the first level of response. And I could explain that at great length in all the different dimensions on which the equivalency is nonsense. But consider the purpose behind the Black Lives Matter protests. At their heart, from a legal standpoint, these were protests aimed at realizing the promise of democracy for all Americans, particularly Black Americans. The riot at the Capitol, the purpose of that riot was to destroy democracy. So in all respects, including the basic reason that there were these protests and on the one hand and the riot on the other, they're completely diametrically different. And that's what we need to understand. And then you can get into the particulars. No Democratic leaders were arguing or calling for Republicans to be assassinated. No Democratic leaders were in support of the few instances of violence that occurred at the BLM protests. So they're as different as night and day. And these arguments, which you can label whataboutism arguments, are really the arguments of people who have no defense on the merits of the issue before them.
Thank you so much, Bill. Really appreciate your time.
Oh, you're most welcome.
My guest has been Bill Blum, lawyer, retired judge, novelist, writer, and lecturer at USC Annenberg School of Communications. We've been discussing the Senate impeachment trial of Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.